You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
And yes, there is a day two of SEC Media Days. We are working our way through it. Next, however many hours you care to be a part of this, we are here. And we thank you very much for being on board this morning. Those of you who weren't watching or listening, Kirby Smart addressed the media. Pretty predictable in what he had to say in relation to the off-the-field incidents. We've also seen and heard from Hugh Freeze. Later on in this program, we'll hear from Zach Arnett. He'll join us, as well as his star quarterback, among the many, many guests that will be dropping in. We begin. I don't know how to introduce this next guest. So let me get the script they wrote out for me. His name is Chris Marwer. I don't know what he does, but he is entertaining. Chris, great to see you again. Thanks so much for making time.
I appreciate that. That is I mean, you said day two. You seem thrilled. I know this is like your favorite week.
I do like everything that goes on off mic. It's fun to meet people that you haven't seen, to meet, especially young guys who are like, this is their first time. You don't want to tell them it won't be much fun the next time
right.
you come, but it is. I mean, that part is fun. I mean, other than that, you always hear the conversation. What's going on? Well, I mean, that's
right.
That's the same every year.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to pat myself on the back because my first year, and I don't know if you remember this. I hope you blocked it out, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. Is when we had the joke about having a restraining order because of how awful my first interview ever with you was, and I was out of breath and I was scared to death. And look at us now, Paul.
So, I'm trying to remember. Was that like a podcast we did or on the
it
air?
It was the last day in 2018,
oh,
and you were out the door to go to vacation, and I don't know how.
Yeah, because 2018, I was still struggling with the addiction, so I probably don't remember.
Perfect. well, I'm glad you beat it. I was worried about
but
you did.
I didn't go to Betty Ford. I just walked into some place, and I got better.
You walked into Media Days, and here we go. That's how you do it.
I do remember that. What were you doing at the time?
I was working at STS. It's the same thing. Yeah. So, like, I mean, I still cover college football, obviously, for Saturday on South and the podcast. But I just remember asking you a question, and you looked at me, and you could tell I was nervous.
Yeah.
And you just ate me alive.
Yeah, we were like standing somewhere.
Yeah, on the second level.
I had somebody come up to me yesterday, reminded me of that, and they go, hey, man, I'm a young guy. I was like, sure, I'll be happy. And the first question the guy asked me, what's your favorite car?
I got I was going to say favorite smell, but I didn't do
that.
I mean, that'd be weirder.
I get that always on Friday when you're on campus. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy will come for a, hey, what?
Yeah.
It's always some cliche that's going around,
right.
But I'm not doing favorite color with a guy. I mean, I want to say, you just blew an opportunity to talk to Paul Feinbaum.
I know. Listen, that sounds like it's like I don't – not arrogant, but that's what that is. And so you – I would be upset.
You go up to Chris Marwer and ask his favorite coach, no big deal.
Yeah, we'll do it for like 15 minutes. I'll tell you about my favorite coach, just the whole array of them.
So, I'm curious because I do remember you, and was there somebody else with you?
It was Connor O'Gara.
Yeah. That was Connor O'Gara?
I'll tell the story.
Okay.
And
I remember now.
I remember
John Hayes was like, so you got to do this podcast.
Right.
I said, I don't want to do this. These two guys will never be right. They'll never make it.
That's right. I remember, so there was, I had a question ready to ask you about something, and it was about like the new coaches. I think at the time it was like Pruitt and a couple other guys.
Yeah.
And that was my question ready. And Connor started to ask you something similar, and he said, say that aliens come down from outer space.
Right.
And they need a new head coach. And I was like, what in the blank is happening right now? And I remember you had this look on your face. And then he ended up going into the question that I was going to ask. And I remember, then he hands me the mic, and I'm looking at you, and you were like, it just ate me alive. But anyway, we're back.
I do remember
2023
that.
Now.
And I can't believe that was Connor O'Gara. Whatever happened to him?
I don't know. He also, the Betty Ford thing. Everyone's doing it.
There's a really funny joke in that, but I can't do it
on
air.
Yeah, don't do it. Tell me off air for sure, and I'll text it to him.
Tell me what you got out of the Kirby Smart day.
So, I'm always impressed when we talk to Kirby Smart in general, mm-hmm. and all the stuff he says, because he does seem like he's always prepared. And I think we look at this, and I know that you had some comments yesterday about Saban and like making the playoff. I don't think it's ever been tougher for him to make the playoff because of what Kirby's building. And like, listen, my whole family's from Anniston, Alabama. I grew up around like Alabama mm-hmm. football. It's what Saban's done is incredible. I don't know if he was ever doing it at this level that Kirby's doing it at. Maybe it's too early to say that. But I will also say I think that he did a good job of speaking to his team through the podium. And he might do a better job of that than anyone else in the conference, including Saban, in terms of just talking to his team.
Well, I think Saban at one time was, here I go again with a headline.
Oh, boy.
But I mean, he was the best. I don't think he's as good anymore because I think he's like way too hung up on the NIL to communicate accurately to his players. But, you know, Kirby, I mean, I'm not bothered by what he did. I mean, I'm surprised that maybe being the former newspaper guy, right. I mean, I don't quite understand all the skeletons going on between the
AJC.
Yeah. I'm trying not to say it.
Oh, sorry.
Every time we do, we lose another Georgia listener. Do you understand that?
No, I'm from Atlanta, too, so I really – it's an odd thing. I think that, like, if you talk to, like, old-school journalists, a lot of them would probably feel that same way about, like, why we're not talking about this more. I'm not really in that. I don't.
Like I asked an old-school journalist that yesterday. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's and I don't – because I don't think that anybody's out to get
– No.
A program. I just don't believe that. I will say I'm very confused as to why it's not being talked about more and how it's not a bigger issue. Because I do feel like if it was somewhere else, maybe a team that's not as much that's more hated nationally.
Yeah.
If it was Ohio State, Alabama, Notre Dame, I think it would be maybe more of a national story. But it also I also try to trust the good in people probably too much. That's how we're still friends, I guess. I don't know if he. I just don't think on either side it might be as big of a deal that maybe some people hope it is, and I don't know how it's affected besides that they hope it is.
Yeah, I think as soon as we get out of here, it's over.
Right.
And then it's what does Carson Beck look like?
You know, yeah,
all the things that matter most to fans, and that's one thing that that I'm starting to really understand better.
Mm-hmm.
Fans don't care about all this off the field stuff. I mean, they'll believe whatever you want them to believe.
It's still important too, because like you saw what happened to Northwestern. Like, you're still raising young men and you're putting them out hopefully better than they came into the program. And I think that's probably happening at all of the places here in the SEC, and including Georgia. But yeah, I mean, if it is probably some level of concern. But you're right. It sounds like kind of. I don't know, dismissive to say like, well, you know, we're just talking about the quarterback thing, but that is what we're going to start focusing on here in a couple weeks, and that's kind of the
end. And that's why I, Chris, this railing about this and NIL, and fans just want to get to the stadium.
Yeah.
They don't care what their players are making.
Right.
As long as they win.
Yeah. Well, and I thought the one takeaway I had from today, and it wasn't with Kirby, it was with what Hugh Freeze just said, and somebody brought up the fact about like fiscal responsibility and financial literacy. And him saying that there's staff, I think it was five staff members that are non-football related at Auburn that are there specifically to be a resource to student-athletes for financial literacy. And I think that's so important because otherwise, you know, you're going to leave in the same boat that you came in, and I think that's not what any of us want.
No, I think what's Hugh Freeze doing here? Is Liberty in the SEC now?
I will say that the first thing when Sankey brought him on and he said, former head coach at Liberty or University, I was like, and? And then the first thing out of Freeze's mouth was, good to be back. And I was like, "That's you guys did not rehearse this before you came out." So,
I wish the commissioner had said how many times he looked down and Hugh Freeze was on the phone trying to get it.
I mean, there were some good questions with you. I thought he did a good job, too. I think, like, for the most part, I didn't. I'll be honest. I had a very awful flight experience to get here. As I told the producer, it was a nightmare. So I didn't stick around for Clarkley this morning. I woke up late. But everyone else I've been impressed with so far.
What's Clarkley doing here? I met Clark Coons' dad. I met his dad earlier.
Okay.
Dad came by when I was doing something right over there, and like, you're Clark Lee Senior. I mean, like,
they built the same.
And I saw Clark, and I mentioned it to him, and he said, "Man, my whole family's here."
That's awesome. Well, because it's Nashville.
Yeah.
And they're also probably stuck at the hotel because of all the construction. They probably just can't physically get home.
I was going to complain about that. I'm glad you brought it up.
I got in at 2 a.m. last night, Paul, after 24 hours of nightmarish travel, and I'm like, get into bed.
Okay, where were you coming from?
Columbia, South Carolina to Atlanta to here. And before anyone says anything to me on social media about I could have just driven,
it's not that far.
It's not. But I had already made it was cheaper to fly. And in hindsight, I took Delta. It was a whole thing.
It took 24 hours to go, 412
minutes?
It
was
miles?
A 37-minute flight. Paul, at one point, my flight was at 12:30 in the morning. They canceled it, put us on the plane at 2 a.m., and then told us on the plane, they said, listen, we're not going to take off. We're just here to alleviate the customer service line. And I was like, that's the most honest and hurtful thing anyone's ever said to me.
That happened to me once. I just went ahead and walked
up
and
said,
I'm Nick Saban. Where's my plane?
Yeah, that's fair. That's what I need to start doing. Nobody's going to believe it.
Chris.
There's Clark Lee.
Where?
It's not Josh Pate. Josh Pate. That was close.
I think Josh had a better year than Clark Lee.
Those are your words, not mine. Don't get me in trouble.
We'll be back. Chris, thank you for and listen, about that time that you and Connor O'Gara.
The restraining order is lifted whether you like it or not.
You're lucky I spoke to you.
Okay, again. I appreciate that.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Finebaum Show podcast.
Back at SEC Media Days, Nathan King joining us from Auburn Undercover. Nathan, good to hook up again. How are you, and how did this day go for the Auburn Tigers, especially Hugh Freeze?
Yeah, we were talking about it beforehand. We're so used to Auburn going on the last day, so that was a bit of an adjustment. They put Tennessee on the last day, though. I feel like that maybe was purposeful here in Nashville. No, I mean, there was a lot of what you expect in terms of questions for Freeze on the main stage. He addressed a lot of the nitty-gritty with us, of course, beforehand, but then, you know, getting to the stuff that's a little bit more popular out there. Yeah, I mean, he's back in the SEC for the first time since the 2016 season, of course, with Ole Miss. But the last time he was here at Media Days, there was a lot of drama. I believe Houston Nutt had sued the program like a week before Media Days.
It was terrible. We did an interview with him that morning, and I mean, it was one of the more awkward.
Yeah,
and I mean, it was like everything was emptied out, and he was defensive and nervous. And
man,
I mean, he knew it was over.
Yeah. Well, you know, in reference to that, big kind of heel turn from that today. Very comfortable. You could tell his plan was just to kind of be low key. Really, that's and we've talked about it before. That's kind of been his game plan at Auburn since the beginning of this. Realizing what they didn't have last season, realizing how bare the cupboard was in a bunch of areas, and kind of just saying, hey, we're going to take this thing, you know, day by day. Of course, what they did in the transfer portal was really big with that. And, you know, I think they're in a good position really here in fall camp to be better at a lot of positions than they were in terms of a lot of position groups last season. And so I think that's a lot of what he tried to express today. Of course, there were, you know, questions about his past transgressions and all that. He had to expect that, of course. But in terms of Auburn as an individual
team. I'm curious about that because what left, and I'm not one to ever circumvent questions, but what left is there to ask Hugh Freeze?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot that was addressed in November when he got hired, kind of just saying outwardly to the Auburn fans, like, look, give me a chance. Obviously know what happened, but, you know, give me a chance here to earn your trust. And so far, as you look, you know, everybody's an offseason national champion, of course, but you look at what they accomplished through the offseason in terms of rebuilding this roster, and everything's been pretty positive so far. And, of course, when you do that, that helps out a little bit of the fan base who maybe wasn't on board so much at first.
Well, what does the quarterback situation look like? You got the transfer, you got an incumbent. How does that break down?
Sure. So Peyton Thorne comes in from Michigan State. From an experience standpoint, there's really no question in terms of who should be projected to be the starter here at the moment. 26 career starts for him on the Power 5 level. Of course, Michigan State had a great 2021 season. He was really good then. 49 career touchdown passes bringing in. You mentioned the incumbent, Robbie Ashford. He dealt with a lot last year. A lot of injuries, bad O-line, bad receivers. Obviously, it was kind of bad news all around last season. But, you know, at the moment, it'd be difficult to not say that Peyton Thorne would be the starter if the season started today. But Freeze was kind of able to provide a little bit more specifics today. They've got four quarterbacks in the room, but he said, give us about 9 or 10 practices, but that needs to be cut down to 2. There's no way you're realistically going to spread all those reps out. And it is presumably going to be Robbie Ashford and Peyton Thorne. So, you know, they've got a lot more help at receiver. They've got a lot more help on the O-line. I think all of that lends itself to Peyton Thorne winning the job just because he is a little bit more of a classically trained pocket quarterback and maybe fits into this offense well. But at the same time, there's a lot of stuff Robbie Ashford does that he can't do. There's a lot of stuff he does as an athlete. And I'm interested, too, if let's say Thorne does win the job, there's a lot that Robbie Ashford brings to the table. Is he maybe still going to be a part of this offense moving forward? But you're right, that was a big question here today, and that's going to be the number one focus when fall camp kicks off.
We're talking about Auburn with Nathan King. I was with somebody earlier today, and he was saying that now Auburn fans don't need to get too carried away here. And I was like thinking, why not? I mean, this has been it was like been living in a bomb shelter for 2 years with Brian Harsin. Describe what it's like. You interact with fans all the time on your side. You see them all around Auburn. What are Auburn fans thinking right now? What are their expectations?
Sure. I think a lot more measured now that, like you mentioned, now that they know, I hesitate to say rock bottom. It wasn't rock bottom. It wasn't even as bad as, you know, a decade ago, 2012. But they saw how bad things got on the recruiting trail with Brian Harsin. They saw how tumultuous things can get behind the scenes. And Hugh Freeze talked about it today. That alignment it's a buzzword, but it's also so important, and it feels like that really is going in the right direction right now for Auburn. So in terms of fan expectations, in terms of kind of their outlook on the program, it started all the way back when Cadillac Williams took this thing over, really reinvigorated the program, one that was, you know, not dead in the water, but the energy was way down. And like I talked about before, Hugh Freeze, he's kind of checked all the boxes that you should do in terms of rebuilding a team, in terms of what you should do in a transition year. On the field, You look at your win totals, six or seven is kind of where you hang around. I'm kind of in the 7 win range. Man, if you could do that in the regular season and then add like a bowl win, you're talking a 3-win improvement from last season. I wasn't that high on them until they got a good transfer quarterback, until they replenished so many different spots on the roster. They're still going to take their lumps naturally in a year one, but it's difficult for me to not see this being a good bit better team than they were last year when they went 5-7.
From a recruiting standpoint, what's going on?
Sure. I mean, everybody's, of course, got their big weekend in the summer. Every program does. Their Big Cat weekend is coming up. I believe they've got 6 confirmed 5-stars that are going to be on campus at the moment. You look at their recruiting rankings in 2024, numbers-wise, it's not exactly where you want it to be, but it's not how you start. It's how you finish in recruiting. Average recruit rating is number 7 in the country right now, so that's always a solid. They've got a quarterback of the class. That's always big. He's kind of being that player recruiter for them. When you look at the difference between Freeze and Harsin, you can kind of look no further than what they did to end the 23 class. They flipped 3 Power 5 transfers, did a good job of shoring that up. They get a top 75 recruit in Keldrick Falk. They get a top 100 corner in Kyan Lee. And so Auburn fans were quickly introduced a month into the job for Hugh Freeze. oh, this is what somebody who can close in recruiting kind of looks like. And I mean, as you know, Brian Harsin didn't make himself known on campus as much as he should have. In the building, I guess you should say.
Are we sure he was really there?
Well, I mean, I go back to the me and my colleague at Auburn Undercover did a podcast the day after he got fired, and the title was Recruiting Horror Stories because it was the day after Halloween. And it it really did kind of feel that way sometimes. You know, an official visitor on Sunday, not to drone on the past, but an official visitor on Sunday can't find the head coach, right? I mean, he's nowhere to be found to talk to the family of, you know, a high four-star recruit. And so it's needless to say that that's not the same right now. High school coaches are feeling a better relationship. Local products, they're really putting an emphasis on Alabama and Georgia, which you should. So, yeah, all the vibes seem positive right now. Again, everybody's really good in the offseason, of course. Everybody always is two thumbs up, especially when you're making a transition year. But it seems like they're on the right track in recruiting. I'd be shocked if they're not back in a top 15 range when 2024 is said and done.
So finally, Nathan, you said it a minute ago. I want to just close on projections. Weird non-conference game earlier.
Sure.
But it looks really winnable. So do the other ones. If you get four in the non-conference, who are the three conference wins to get you over 500?
Right. So you mentioned Cal. They go there in week two. That's a first-ever game, first-ever matchup for them. The other ones are cupcakes. If you win that Cal game, you're talking 4-0 in the non-con, and that's a good sort of starting point. There's a couple SEC games I think they have to get at Vanderbilt, as we sit here in Nashville, as good as Clark Lee, I think, is a great coach, and they did a good job improving. That's a game you got to win. You got to go on the road
absolutely.
And beat Vanderbilt. And then Mississippi State, everything they've gone through and kind of maybe the transition they're going to be in this year, they come to Jordan-Hare. You can't lose that game at home. They've lost two straight to Mississippi State. Cannot do that again. And then there's a couple fringe kind of toss-up games. I look at on the road at Arkansas. They lose a lot defensively. They're going to be a good running team. But Ole Miss is kind of the one I come back to. And that's interesting. You have the Lane Kiffin situation and the coaching search. Obviously, Hugh Freeze has a lot of history, of course, with Ole Miss. I think that's going to be a charged-up game, not only for him emotionally, as much as maybe he wants to kind of skirt around that. Him emotionally, that's going to be very charged up. Jordan-Hare, for lack of, maybe it'll be kind of drummed up on their part. Maybe it's not, you know, necessarily so concrete, but I think they'll be venomous toward Lane Kiffin, even though it was just a basic coaching search. So that's going to be a really big game. Also, heading into the Ole Miss game, Auburn could be 0-3. They play Georgia, they play LSU, and they play Texas A&M on the road. It's kind of a back-against-the-wall situation. You could be winless in the conference. Let's get our first win at home kind of thing. So that's kind of how I land on the seven wins.
I think you've done a good job. And, of course, they'll beat Alabama because they always do in Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Almost did it a couple years ago with
sure
Brian Harsin and T.J. Finley. So
that will be a game that
chase your dreams, kids.
Will live in infamy.
Yes, yeah.
And
sure.
I say this not because thank goodness because Brian Harsin would still be there otherwise.
Yeah, it's very. It would have bought him some goodwill when February came around, and for sure.
It would have. I've seen that movie. Nathan, thank you. Great to visit with you again. Enjoyed
sure.
being with you recently on your podcast, and we are coming back. We're live in Atlanta, but we're in Nashville.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hey, welcome back. We are in Nashville. Second day, SEC Media Days. Talking to a number of people later on in the program, we will check in with Will Rogers, the high-flying quarterback from Mississippi State, also the coach there among our many, many guests. Jordan Hill joining us now from Dogs 24/7. Jordan, thank you. Appreciate it. And your impressions of Kirby Smart and the Dogs today. What'd you learn?
Yeah, you know, I thought that I was very interested to just see the way Kirby approached being on the podium, how things would go. And, you know, I think that he kind of took the right approach with what he had to say. You know, he was a little bit lighter. I think he sort of learned how to navigate being on the podium and just dealing with media in general to see, you know, I was still in school when he started at Georgia. And a little bit combative, a little kind of back and forth, and I don't think you saw that as much on the main stage. With a lot of attention given everything that's going on at Georgia this offseason, I thought that he was really thorough. I thought he got his message across, which we talked to him before he went onto the main stage, and he talked about he really wanted to push the point of nobody in the program being complacent. You heard a lot of that. You heard a lot about the drive with these players. Even the guys that played big roles on the team that won the championship last year, you know, they really want to push the point that this team has not earned anything yet, that everything's...
So let me ask you about that, because so you're saying that the folks that cover Georgia met with him?
Yeah, we had a chance to talk to him.
And then, let me say, tell the audience, this is something that not every school does, but a lot of them do. So, some meet with, some are like Kirby meeting with the beat reporters, those who it matters most. Then there are others like Nick Saban who only meets with the big-time national reporters and completely blowing off the local folks who earn a living covering him. What happens? I'm not asking to reveal confidences, but what are these things like? Take us behind the scenes.
You know, I think, again, sort of the point I was just making, Kirby has sort of learned how to deal, especially with local media. I think coming in, you know, he didn't have a whole lot of background dealing with media at Alabama. You know, they would talk probably once a year in fall camp, and that was about it. And you could kind of see it early on. But I think in time, especially because there's so many familiar faces on the Georgia beat, that he's learned to trust guys. And you know, I thought today that, you know, he sat down. A lot of it was injury talk. They had a player, a defensive back, who's not with the program, so there was talk about that. But also just generally, you know, what he wanted to get out of media days, his message, like I was saying, to the entire room, what he wanted to convey to everybody. You know, I think, again, Kirby – just like as being a head coach, I think he has learned how to do the job and do it well. A big piece of that is media, and I think he's gotten a whole lot better at that in these last 7-8 years.
At a situation or an event like this, Jordan, how far does he go beyond what you already know, what's in the media? I mean, does he take you behind the scenes saying, listen, this guy – is no longer the program. Here are a couple of reasons why. I know you won't report. I mean, does it get to that point, or does he still pretty safe?
It's pretty safe. I mean, it's essentially the, you know, he's not here anymore, and we wish him the best.
Okay.
You know, he's not someone that's going to convey all the things that went on. And even with injuries, you know, a lot of, you know, we expect him to be full go, but not a lot of real detail into what's going on there. So enough that we can publish stories, Paul,
right.
But probably if you're reading it, you're going, I still got several questions
okay.
about the situation.
But he is, I mean, these are essentially in politics called backgrounders, where it's mostly known, but there's more context. Is that fair?
Definitely. That's exactly how I describe it. Is you can kind of put together the pieces, but he's not going to lay out all the pieces there
okay.
for you to do it.
And by the way, I think, Jordan, the reason why you don't do that is that while you generally trust everyone in the room, you can't be sure.
No, and I can't blame really any coach. You know, if I would give, if I was in Kirby's shoes, you know, the minimum that I could give to get along. But he understands that we got a job to do, and he said it many times, and I do think he's being honest, that he understands why we're out there. He'll say from time to time, which I think he did today in the main room, that he appreciates our jobs and understands why it's important. He may not always like what we have to write and what we have to say, but I do think that he understands sort of the give and take that goes there. And again,
what would normally upset Kirby Smart in terms of media distribution?
I think the biggest thing would be just anything being inaccurate, which
okay.
I think you would see with what's been going on with the AJC. But really on the football side more than anything, I don't think he likes to see players called out. I think that, you know, again, Kirby was a player. He knows what it's like to be in those shoes. And, you know, I think back to that national championship game that they lost against Alabama. You know, there was a lot of blame put on guys like Dominic Sanders for that last play. And, you know, I don't think that that's the kind of thing Kirby wanted to see, because he understands that, you know, everybody's a play away from being humbled. I think that's the sort of thing. I don't think there's been a ton of that. There especially hasn't been that the last couple of years. Right. There hasn't been very many plays where things have gone wrong for Georgia. But on the whole, I think he's pretty fair when it comes to dealing with us. And, again, understanding he's not going to want to save everything that gets written about Georgia. But he understands that there's good, and then there's things we've got to write about that he's not going to be too crazy about.
Your expectations, I'm sure, are like everyone else's. Georgia's going to be the predominant pick to win here and the national championship. Do you see any reason why they won't?
No. I mean, I think they're going to go undefeated in the regular season. I think that's largely a product not only of the talent they got, but just the way the schedule fell this season. The thing that really interests me, Paul, is just if they do have a slip-up, if they lose at Tennessee or play in Kentucky, what does that look like for their playoff chances? Because they can't rely on a really, really loaded schedule. But I think they're going to get there. You know, I think the biggest question still for me is quarterback. But I've heard enough behind the scenes to think that Carson Beck is ready to take on that role. Now, is he going to be as productive as Stetson Bennett? I don't think so. I don't think anyone could be just because of the experience and the fact that Stetson was a very dangerous dual threat quarterback. So I think that they're going to go undefeated. I think they're going to go back to the playoff. And I think it's going to be a crapshoot because they were very, very close to losing that Peach Bowl and found the plays they had to have and went on and won it again.
Jordan Hill, Dogs 24/7. We'll stay in touch as we get closer to the first game. It's great to see you.
Yeah, great. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you very much.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. We are live in Nashville. Carl Reed joins us from 24/7. To say he's a media guy would be completely false. We've had the coach on quite a few times in recent weeks and months talking about players and recruiting and all the things that go in. Coach, before we talk about media, I would like to talk a little bit about your career. You started most of your life in high school. Tell us about that experience and how it changed over the time that you, from your beginning.
I was a high school coach for 20 years, very successful. I'm most known for my time at Lutheran North in St. Louis, Missouri on Lucas and Hunt. Great program. Steve Atwater, former Razorback, Denver Bronco is an alum. Jim Crane, owner of the Houston Astros, is an alum. We had a lot of success there. And during the course of coaching high school, you build a lot of great relationships, not only with the kids, but also with college coaches and guys you meet through recruiting and having some of the players that we had, and three different Army All-Americans. Ronnie Perkins went to Oklahoma. Antonio Doyle went to Texas A&M to play for Jimbo. Toriano Pride now is at Clemson playing with Coach Dabo Sweeney. So you take those relationships and you just build, and you're trying to help as many kids as you can. 14 of my former high school coaches are now all head coaches at their own programs. And so it just expands the amount of opportunities that you have to help kids and give kids the opportunity. St. Louis is a really rough place. So you're trying to get the kids as many opportunities, Paul, as you can to get them out and get them sent to the next level.
I've always admired high school coaches. I've covered high school football a long time ago and at the beginning of my career. And you see some of these guys on TV and, you know, the big Texas programs and the one in Alabama with Rush Probst, and you think it's glamorous, but it's not. I mean, it's hard work, and it's impactful too, isn't it?
It's not like that at all. I can remember the first time the University of Oklahoma came to my school. They called and they asked, do you want me to meet you at the field house? And I say, brother, this ain't Texas. It ain't no field house in St. Louis. You can meet me on the concrete, you know. And so that was a different situation. But I've been all through the state of Texas. I've been to Hoover, Alabama. Some of those programs are college-like in their facilities and in their resources. But you also have to understand, even though Texas and Georgia and Alabama have great high school football, there are a lot of NFL guys, a lot of big-time college guys who came from places like St. Louis, came from Chicago, from Memphis, other areas where the facilities are not quite the same and where the resources aren't the same. And it's a lot of high school coaches that aren't making $100,000. They're making $40,000 and they're having to teach six classes a day. And so it's important we don't overlook those guys also.
Yeah, no, I have a nephew who's a high school football coach. And it, just from what I've learned from him, it's not what you see on MTV. It's completely different. Talk about the transition. I joked about the media, but you're really here for a lot of reasons. Tell us about your move to media.
I built a lot of relationships with the guys at 24/7 over the course of having players playing in the Army All-American game, which now is called the Adidas All-American Bowl. And there was an opportunity to transition into that side when they had a spot open, and we lost one of our staff members, went to Vanderbilt as a GM, and so that opened up a spot. And the relationship I built, I owe a lot to Steve Wiltfong, the national director of recruiting. He was the one who facilitated that initial move and who thought that I would be a good fit. And it's went really well for me. I was looking to kind of do something different. A lot has changed about high school coaching. A lot has changed about recruiting when you're talking about NILs and transfer portal. So it gave me an opportunity to try something different. And I said if I didn't like it, I could always go back to coaching. But it's been good so far.
So we talked to you about players and programs and relationships, but what do you do? I mean, in terms of how it differs from what you used to do.
So I'm a national college football analyst. I cover mainly college football at 24/7, but I'm able actually to help more kids now than just the 60 guys that you coach. You're able to touch more people. You're able to talk to and have more relationships that are bigger. When you're coaching, you're really just locked in on your program and trying to win and trying to make sure those kids are okay. But being in the media and being in this position has given me the opportunity to impact kids at a national level.
Let's talk about some of the subjects that we've been talking about here, the talent in the SEC. And, you know, we do a lot of bragging here, but you know it. How does this league differ from everyone else?
Well, it's the best players in the world playing the SEC. Let's talk about something as simple as week one against Florida State a year ago. Mason Smith goes down. He's a first-round talent at defensive tackle, and you got a guy like Mekhi Wingo who steps right in, and you don't miss a beat. That's the kind of talent that the SEC has, especially at
He's back now.
And so you're talking about Brian putting Kelly's both of those guys out together. Brian Kelly, look at the way he's recruited. Look at the program he's built. You have programs now with the transfer portal and NIL that are going to start to challenge Alabama, where they're already challenging them. And a guy like Brian Kelly, he wants to take over the SEC West. So when you're thinking about the SEC, it's where the best players in the country really want to play. It's where most of them are. The NFL draft numbers show that. The amount of national championships show that. But I think that something that gets overlooked by the masses when I go to other places, when I go to the West Coast, when I go up north, when I go on the East Coast, the high school football in the South, the emphasis is just much bigger. One thing that I was concerned about when the University of Missouri went from the Big 12 to the SEC was that the state association in Missouri at the time would not allow the high schools to have spring ball. And all of the other southern states have spring football, and it's a huge emphasis on it. And if the University of Missouri, if the state wants them to be able to be elite and compete, they need to loosen up some of those rules as well on how often kids can practice, because that's a major advantage. Football in the South is just looked at differently everywhere.
Outside, let's move beyond. I mean, I think part of my answer would my part of my question, the answer would be Ohio State, but Ohio State's in the same realm. But who else is in the neighborhood with the SEC?
The usual suspects: Ohio State, Clemson, USC, our program, Michigan. are programs who've put the similar investment into the amount of money they're spending on recruiting and evaluation. Recruiting departments have changed. Coach Saban was the first guy to really go NFL-style personnel in the recruiting department. But look at how important is Mark Pantone at Ohio State. Yeah. Guys like him. You would think about Oregon, Marshall Malco, what he does for Dan Lanning at Oregon. There are 6 to 7 schools outside of the SEC who have put a similar emphasis and focus on playing football and recruiting at the level you have to recruit to, because all of the best programs understand that it's about the players. And so they have given their players budgets, and they have given their coaches the budgets that they need to recruit. They've given them the amenities that the top players want in terms of the size dorm rooms and apartments these guys are living in, the training rooms, what they're feeding these guys. So there's programs outside the SEC who have made that commitment, but that's a smaller number than actually in the SEC.
I mean, is it possible for anyone outside of the schools you've mentioned to be a factor?
Well, I think that comes down to what does the administration want to do from the top down. What is the president saying? What is the Board of Regents saying? Do you make a decision and say, we want to be elite in football? I think a team like UCLA joining USC, going to the Big Ten, shows that they're serious in the way that they want to compete. So you have to look at outside of those things, but it does cost a lot of money. How much revenue are you willing to put into it?
Coach, we're about out of time, but we will do this again soon. I can't wait. Thank you very, very much for making time for us.
Thank you for having me.
Great. We are going to be back. A lot happening in the next couple of hours, and we'll be back after this.